Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
He could file a lawsuit against us and the secretary, but he would have to show, it seems to me, that he had some reasonable likelihood of collecting some actual qualifying contribution. The other issue is, where did he end up? He'd have to show that that number is the number he's short by.
Currently, Garcia is leading by 15 points over his nearest rival, State Senator Steve Farley, and Fryer in a distant third place. With what is most surprising, there's almost a third of voters are still undecided.
Under federal law, when a voter updates their address through the Motor Vehicle Division, that information is then automatically sent to the Secretary of State, who should use that information to automatically update a voter's registration address. That process is not taking place in Arizona.
Imagine right before an election, you've got, you know, 500,000 people getting letters that is confusing them as to the address of their voter registration. It's just not a good idea. We try to make decisions on lawsuits about, you know, whether we're going to settle something or whether, you know, we're going to deny something based on what's best for the voters.
And with us to talk about the latest in some of Arizona's primary races, new voter registration numbers, and more are Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, currently the CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Thank
thanks for having us.
So we got some news a couple of hours ago that we're going to start off with and just spend a few minutes on, and that is the word, Chuck, that Senator John McCain has decided to no longer take treatment for his cancer diagnosis. He's been fighting it for a year or so. You've been in this game for a long time. I wonder if there's an observation, a story you can tell about Senator McCain that you think really fits his narrative.
Well, I'm writing a blog right now about that. I did some remarks recently, and the story of his life is one of perseverance. This is a fight all of us lose, but he gets up. I mean, you know, the story of his life, which I admire so much, and I've been fortunate enough to be a very tiny part of it. He actually says that bringing me out here was the greatest mistake of his career, to witness that you had somebody that get knocked down, get up in public life. That's unheard of. I mean, it's not first acts, second acts, third acts. It was a lifelong act, and the courage that showed and the bravery and the energy and tenacity is just something I hope, you know, we can all contemplate in the days ahead and be thankful for.
And Neil, can you share something with us as well?
The word maverick still comes to mind, but dignity and maverick kind of go together, I think, at this point. Just watching how he has handled the diagnosis over the last year or so, and the folks around him as well, Cindy and all the members of the family. It's been a window to that kind of a situation for many people who love and care about the senator and all of his family, that a lot of people may not have ever had that kind of a window to that kind of experience. So it's been interesting to watch in that respect. But I will say, seeing the news this morning, even when someone is in that situation, it still brings on a very melancholy feeling, and you start to remember all the special times that you had with that very, very special person. And, I go all the way back to 1982 with Senator McCain, so it's special for me, too.
And, of course, we'll be talking a lot more about Senator McCain in the coming days. And now let's move to something that is less important in the big picture, but that we talk about a lot on this show, and that is what's going on in the primary races. Chuck, let's talk about some of what's going on in the Senate, the U.S. Senate situation. We've seen the latest poll, which doesn't surprise anyone. I presume your data is around the same, that Representative Martha McSally pulling away from Kelly Ward and also former Sheriff Arpaio. But interesting, great story today in the Republic, which, of course, we've heard about as well. We've probably all seen it. This new ad, Martha McSally against Kyrsten Sinema. So now McSally, a few days before the primary, has finally shifted her focus to the general?
Yeah, and be ready. We're about to be assaulted by the media at campaigns of everybody in Washington, D.C., so button your ears down and try and read and find something that is meaningful to you to listen to. the mud war is about to begin, and they've both been tossing at each other, actually. Sinema has an ad up as well targeting McSally. So here we go. The war is on.
This is the state of politics for a long time, but certainly it's going to be that way in 2018. But, you know, it's interesting. I was surprised that the first hit against Sinema was the same picture and the same story that was used against her when she first ran for Congress. It didn't work then. I'm not so sure how it's going to resonate this time.
Neil, leading up until now, Chuck mentioned Representative Sinema's most recent ad, but most of her ads up until now have been very positive, sort of touting her independence, some of the work that she's done on particular issues. Is that a difficult turn to go from talking positively about yourself to going pretty hard negative against an opponent?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's expected. I think it's what they do. I think it's what, quite honestly, it's what the people in Chuck's world will tell you works. It's what moves people. It's what the polling shows actually moves people. Both of these candidates are going from individual congressional districts, one in southern Arizona, which I would say is even a little bit harder, one in the metropolitan Phoenix area. They have to introduce themselves to the universe of voters statewide. And that's what I think Congresswoman Sinema has done very effectively in the early part of the campaign without a real viable opponent in her primary. And, of course, you know, Congresswoman McSally didn't have that luxury. She had to fight off Ward and Arpaio. So I think it's all to be expected.
Yeah, I think the train from here on out, it's a little bit more difficult road for McSally because she did have this primary contest. She'll have really good Republican numbers. Kirsten has been running essentially a general election campaign since for the last 5 weeks really well, narrating a campaign targeting to those traditional MOVE voters, which are Republican women, independents, parties not disclosed. So she's been messaging to them and doing a terrific job of that. And so now Martha's job is a little more difficult. She needs to pivot and move and continue to define herself apart from traditional Republicans and where she is. I think we'll see a lot about her military service, her service to the country, and that contrasting with the political service of Kirsten. I think you're going to see a lot of that.
With all of the money that is to be expected in this race, both from the candidates themselves and from outside groups, how do you see sort of the breakdown of what kinds of ads or what kinds of messages to expect from the candidates and their campaigns versus the outside groups? Because traditionally, the outside groups are sort of where you really see the negative stuff.
Right. Most third-party money goes to suppression. So you want to suppress voter participation and eliminate from consideration anybody that wants to consider that person by putting them in a tutu or claiming that they raised your taxes or something, you know, so that you want to make. So I'm really curious to see. I'm still trying to remain open and optimistic that we'll have some kind of legitimate debate. I think both of these people have some substantive things to offer. I would love to see a substantive discussion and debate of the issues. We're not going to see that on TV. You're going to get blaring noises on TV. Neither of them have run a statewide campaign before. Neither of them have consultants that have run a statewide campaign in Arizona before. And so we'll see. And if they get captured by the consultant crew that Neil just referenced as part of me, thanks for that, Neil, that we'll just hear a lot of blah, blah, blah. And, you know, typical in this cycle, you get about a 10-point Republican turnout. So can Kirsten grab some of those Republicans and make them hers and make Sinema or make McSally unacceptable? Or likewise, can she do that on the other side?
And I don't think we know yet what some of those ads are going to be in the last weeks leading up to early voting commencement and through early voting. There's no such thing as Election Day anymore. It's just the last day to vote. I think there's an opportunity where this election is going to be influenced by what happens in Washington, what's happening with the president, what's going on, all of that swirl that's happening there. And then you may see some ads that kind of try to hit that, I don't know what the number is, Chuck, 2-4% of the voters that may be, you know, persuadable in an election like this. And there could be messages about the president and what's going on that could influence, in particular, what I've been told by folks in Chuck's profession, it's women, it's moderate women who are going to make a difference here.
Yeah, that's the traditional swing audience. Republican women are, you know, Margaret Kinsky, God rest her soul, was one of my mentors. And, you know, we always talked about Republican women would move. You know, they could move and be sort of flexible in the electorate. So that will be a battleground issue. You know, and I think Neil's right. We saw somebody said to me just this morning that somebody asked Martha yesterday on the air, you know, do you trust this president? And she walked away. That's not a good answer. The answer to that would be, in every interaction I've had with him, absolutely I do. Mm-hmm. And then move on. Because she's going to have to narrate a campaign apart to get those you know, Trump's approval rating amongst Republicans is about 80%. There's about 80% of the electorate that just, but it's that 20% mm-hmm. that starts to move. And so you got to hold on to those or identify PNDs or eyes or conversely make Sinema unattractive as a candidate.
Now, Chuck, right before the break, I want to have you comment on what Neil had to say about that specific ad that I referenced about Sinema versus McSally. You've got the woman in the military uniform who says that she was out fighting the Taliban while this other person was protesting in a pink tutu. And Neil referenced the fact this has been used before. We've heard the proto-socialist thing before that a lot of people just sort of laugh off. But because this is a statewide race, are there going to be enough people who haven't heard that before where it could eventually really turn into something that Sinema has to really directly respond to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to have to respond to that. You're going to have to respond to the altering narratives of a career colonel, military, combat, first female. You know, she's going to tell you the story about how I had gas flying over my canopy and I had the finger on the trigger and I'm there to solve problems and not a politician. And, you know, Kirsten's going to have to narrate something about that, about her commitment. And Neil and I were talking about that before. Mm-hmm. It really creates a unique opportunity for Kirsten's campaign to really re-message, because she hasn't embraced the hardcore partisan left, mm-hmm. to really re-message her campaign. She's in a unique position to do that. And so it'll be interesting to see if she's allowed to do that, or if they do that.
This could be a race where that limited number of persuadable center people, if there are any of us left, might actually make the difference.
That's Neil Giuliano. Also here is Chuck Coughlin with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap on the show, which continues after this. Good Friday morning. It's the Friday newscap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, currently the CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership, and Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground.
Guys, let's get to another primary race in just a minute. But first, there are three court rulings now on this issue of dealing with ballot measures, this idea called strict compliance. Basically, how closely to the law do citizens who refer something to the ballot have to adhere? And Chuck, this is an issue that you've worked on before. What was called the Outlaw Dirty Money campaign basically is not at this moment anyway allowed to be on the ballot because enough signatures were kicked off. How do you see this all playing out? Because this could impact a number of measures that voters see this November.
So it's going to it'll be heard by the Supreme Court in the next week or so because they got to print the publicity pamphlets. So there's a printing deadline. So we're going to get a ruling. The substance of the argument is the legislature had a substantial compliance standard that the courts and the legislature for initiatives. And that's when the people are acting as a legislative body. And then there's substantial compliance for referenda. Referenda was when you would go refer something that was already passed by a legislative body. My argument in court was that that's an appropriate substantial compliance is appropriate for initiatives because the people are acting as the legislature, and substantial compliance is appropriate because you're repealing the law of an elected body. To date, two judges have not sided on that, and one has. And the balance of those signatures that could get tossed and the methods by which they're using to toss them are the subject of that challenge. And so we would expect a ruling from the court next week on that.
And Neil, this is pretty significant precedent for not just this election, but future elections, right?
Sure. And I think what's interesting and what we don't yet know is what's the real lens of a judge in this situation? Right? Because we all know that lens can be, it's kind of like when you're getting your eyes checked and the guy can kind of change the glass. You know,
Better one, better two.
Yeah, we don't necessarily think that way, but will a judge go for a very hard line or will he say democracy is important? And there's a little bit of a window here and I can flip the glass on that eye exam and in favor of democracy and let it go forward. Well, we don't know.
And this was a big deal at the time of the founders. That's the things the court will look at. This was a big deal as you know, they actually went back when I think in the history of Arizona, when we adopted a constitution, we had to take a bunch of this stuff out to get into the mm-hmm. union. I mean, they were talking about repealing and recalling judges and all kinds of stuff. So they had to go back. And then when we got got in the union when they said, yeah, we'll let these scoundrels in. Then they went back and changed it again after we were in the union. So this is foundational stuff to what I love about Arizona. We were the last one in for a reason. We were the 48th in and for a reason. And, you know, we were pretty much uninhabitable. And without Teddy Roosevelt's help, we'd probably still be uninhabitable. So,
Chuck, as far as outlaw dirty money is concerned, Terry Goddard, who you've worked with before on this sort of thing, was expressing great joy at the fact that there was such a good percentage of accurate signatures, at least based on the sample that the recorders in the Secretary of State's office went over. So, but at the same time, if it doesn't make the ballot, is this something that Terry Goddard, someone like you, someone else will take up again? Because there's no question whether people want to call it dark money, dirty money. It's going to impact 2018 hugely. It'll impact 2020 hugely.
Absolutely. We know every polling data that I've seen on it shows, and we spent a good part of our time in 14 working on this, has shows if it gets to the ballot, it wins. Mm-hmm. And so the people who are opposed to that know that. And so I argued that's one of the reasons they changed the standard, so that they would have more legal options in court to knock it off, because all the data that I've seen. And so if it does go down this time, yes, you will see another effort. The trouble with it is both mainstream parties are addicted to the black tar, dirty money, and anonymous money. And so, you know, and they claim, oh, that's going to inhibit free speech. And, you know, there's a Scalia quote that they get embarrassed by because he wasn't for this. And so, you know, they don't want it to go because they know if it goes on the ballot, they lose.
And Neil, the city you formerly led, of course, was always brought up that 90% of voters
that's
said,
right,
we don't want this in our city elections.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a just kind of the 30,000 foot level on this, what's really going on? This is a challenge to the status quo. And as Chuck indicated, that challenge to the status quo is going to continue whether this gets on the ballot this time or not. And at some point, I believe it would be successful and the voters will do this if we don't have real reform led by our own elected officials, which on this topic is, what do you think, Chuck? Not very likely.
Not likely there, but here you go. I mean, back to the Senate race. This could be an issue in the Senate race. I mean, this would be a great topic if you guys ever get them in your studio. Go, how are you at on that? It'd be really interesting to see where both of them are at on that. I approached the Sinema campaign and when she was just a congresswoman before contemplating this about joining that open and honest effort, as I did many elected officials, and as Neil pointed out, nah, that's sort of your deal. You just go ahead and do that. And so
it's a big challenge to the current status quo with how politics operates and how it works, and politicians and people around politicians will think very carefully about changing that without being able to 100% ability to predict what the outcome is going to be, and they can't do that.
I don't mean to pick on Kirsten, or I went and talked to both Paul Johnson and I went and talked to our state senior senator in 14 when he was on the ballot, and we walked in and said, you got to jump on board. And there was a definite gleam in his eye. He could see it, you know, this was in the, and he wanted to do it. But as Neil said, there's a constituency of people that he has to deal with, and he regretfully declined that opportunity. So Neil's right about that. That's the calculus that we all have to make, and that's why it's hard to get on the ballot, because both of these constituencies are so owned by that issue.
Guys, just a couple minutes left, and I want to mention the governor's race, because one of the things that I'm really curious about is all this money that is being spent, mostly by the RGA, the Republican Governors Association. We've read more than $9 million being spent on ads against David Garcia. We talked about negative ads in the Senate race. And Chuck, I'm wondering, like, what's behind this? Because that seems like an awful lot of money for a group like the Republican Governors Association to be spending in a state like Arizona, at least at this stage of the game.
Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised they haven't spent it on Kirsten. I think it's the matter of that the Ducey administration is one of these places what the RGA feels very akin to. And he's marched in line with the RGA, and he's done and been a good Republican governor, and he's accomplished good things out here. He maybe unwillingly at points, but he did it. I mean, he got it done at the end of the day. And so I think they are doubling down to make sure that he's going to be okay, in what appears to be a fairly unstable cycle, right? Because there's a lot of effort on the left, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, about the getting new voters to participate in a blue wave, and a lot of anger, as Neil alluded to earlier, about the president outside of the Republican Party, the base Republican Party. So it's belt and suspenders approach, I think, that the RGA has taken.
Yeah, early protection money. I mean, I would certainly expect it. If I was in that kind of a situation, I would want – well, sure, they have it. Why not spend it?
Like a preemptive strike kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, guys, let's move on to the voter registration numbers, Chuck, as you alluded to. So, Neil, we're seeing a little bit of a tick up as far as recent registrants, as far as Democrats. There's still that registration disadvantage. But so what does this say to you, that little bit? And, of course, we always talk about how independents are not moderates, but Democrats still need to rely on getting independents to win a lot of these races.
You do, but I think it shows that to a limited degree, I wouldn't say to a great degree, but to a limited degree, the voter registration efforts by the party and with some outside of Arizona money, you know, helping the Democratic Party have been somewhat successful. They have registered some more people to vote. The engagement of those voters and the getting those voters to actually vote, putting them on the permanent early voting list or not, all of those things, I think, are yet to sort of see them operationalize and actually mean anything. But they've had a good level of success at getting people registered.
Absolutely. They've done a terrific job of going out and activating a base of new voters, of people who have heretofore not participated. The challenge
Very good
then,
public radio work. Thank you.
The challenge then is going to get those people and, as Neil suggested, get them actually to participate in the cycle. Let's get a 1% or 2% of them to play. That's probably, 3% is probably 100,000 voters. Mm-hmm. They tend to be younger. They tend to be, younger, and you tend to message them differently. It's part of the activist mm-hmm. base. And what I've talked to people about is we're anticipating in this cycle, over 70% of the electorate will be 50 and older. So that shocks people, but that's the reality of what it is. And so how do you message to that activist base to go get them out while also messaging and making sure that you're not losing this over here?
When you talk about getting those voters to actually show up, is there any evidence to suggest that people who register closer to the actual election day are more likely to vote? Does that matter at all if you registered, 6 months ago or a month before election day?
It's follow-up. It's follow-up, groundwork, teamwork. The bill that the legislature passed to eliminate the personal collection of ballots, that thwarted a lot of this because their ground game was to go out and get those. Now they have to go get them and encourage them to mail them. And
the shift in strategy that I think has been interesting was, I think in both parties, not suppressing primaries in those particular parties, right? So you have more Democratic primaries for state legislative races than you've had in a long time. And in the past, it would have been, don't do that. That makes it harder. But I think what they're finding is it energizes the base and gets more people involved. We'll see. We don't know yet. We'll see if it turns into votes.
D turnout's up. D turnout on early ballots is up compared to last cycle as of today and what we've seen coming back.
Okay. Gentlemen, we'll stop this conversation there. Thanks for being here. Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, currently CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us,
Mark.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.